We begin our exploration of food with a personal story from our very own Maria Tickle.
I'm at the Royal Children's Hospital with my six-year-old daughter. That's her breathing. The reason we're here is for the past 9 months, all I've been hearing is...
Mom, my tummy hurts.
Nothing I did made any difference. Laxatives, cutting out lactose or wheat or sugar, or it did for a while, and then suddenly we were back to square one.
Mom, my tummy hurts a lot.
So, we're here at the hospital hoping for answers, or even better, solutions.
Good girl, sweetheart. Really done, sweetheart. Waiting for the breath to stabilise.
Good girl.
Lila's doing a breath hydrogen test to see whether or not she can digest fructose. And if she can't, maybe that's the source of her ongoing tummy aches, bloating and constipation. Half of me hopes it's positive because then at least we'd have an answer. And the other half hopes it's not because that would mean a lifetime of trying to avoid fructose and fructans, which, once you start looking, seem to be lurking everywhere and make feeding the family a logistical nightmare.
So this will be Lila's baseline. So we compare all of her readings against this baseline reading. And we're done. So your baseline is 2.
So what are we looking for once she has the fructose?
We're looking for an increase 11 above her baseline, and that's a significant change. So that baseline was done at 08:45.
Now you get to have a big drink.
Yay. What does the drink taste like?
What does the drink taste like? Yeah. It tastes very sweet. Yeah. Are you okay with that? Do you like sweet things?
That's good then. You'll probably like this.
I'll get you to drink that, sweetheart. I'd like you to drink it within about 5 minutes if you can. What does it taste like?
Sugary.
Yeah, very sweet, isn't it? Can you get that last little bit, sweetheart? Sorry, darling. So what I'll get you to do, Mum, is I'll need you to come back every half an hour now for the next 2.5 hours. And we'll get Lila to breathe into the machine and we'll be looking for an increase 11 above her baseline.
And so if she gets to 11 or above, that means that she's reacted to the fructose drink, is that right?
That's right, yes, she has, yeah.
Have you seen an increase in the number of kids coming in being tested for fructose intolerance?
We have, over the last couple of years, I think, seen an increase of kids coming in to be tested for lactose and fructose. I'm not sure whether it's our diet over the years has changed and that we're eating more processed foods, and there's a lot of fructose in a lot of processed foods.
And Joanne, you're actually fructose intolerant yourself.
Yes, I am. I was tested early last year and found that I'm fructose intolerant. Wondered why I'd been feeling awful for years and years, and found out that it was the fructose in my diet.
And what has that meant to you and your diet and your lifestyle?
It's changed it to some extent. I'm feeling a lot better now. I've lost my tummy that I had. But I've found that I just feel better. The things I find hard, I guess, is eating out. It's very hard to follow your diet. But with fructose intolerance, it is an accumulation of the fructose. So you can manage going out by maybe eating well and making sure you minimise your intake of fructose foods earlier in the day.
It's amazing. There's onion in everything, isn't there?
There is. I know. And I so miss onion and garlic. Yeah, and apples. I miss my apples that I used to eat so many of. But look, it's certainly manageable, and I know I feel the benefits from being on the diet.
You may not have heard of fructose malabsorption, sometimes called fructose intolerance, although strictly they're quite different. But you're sure to know someone who has the condition because it's becoming increasingly common, affecting 1 in 3 people. Dr. Sue Shepherd is a dietitian specialising in gastrointestinal nutrition, and she herself has celiac disease. Sue's been treating patients with celiac disease since 1999, when it was quite rare and there were only a few dietitians working in the area.
I was also being referred a number of patients who had been investigated because they had symptoms of celiac disease, which are actually the same sort of symptoms as fructose malabsorption. And these people had been investigated for celiac disease. It wasn't it. And yet they still knew that things like wheat and fruits upset them. So I went about into trying to investigate what it was that could possibly be in these foods causing these symptoms. And in fact, there were no dietary guidelines at all for fructose malabsorption. And I began being referred my first few patients who'd had hydrogen breath tests for fructose malabsorption. And because there were no dietary guidelines, I went about learning what happens in the small intestine when people do have fructose malabsorption to understand what is the basis of their malabsorption. What is it that goes wrong with their absorption of fructose? I.e. why is it that they're malabsorbed, and came up with a list of foods of suitable and unsuitable foods for people who suffer from this fructose malabsorption.
Is it more common in Western countries?
Look, unlike celiac disease, where we really only see it in Western countries, you know, celiac disease, which is, of course, the gluten intolerance, and a celiac disease, it's seen in all countries except Eastern Asians. With fructose malabsorption, it is seen in all races. It's seen in both sexes and it's seen at all ages.
What about in Australia? Has the amount of fructose and fructans in our diet, has that increased over the years?
Look, you know, we've always had, so fructose is found in fruits. It's present in every fruit. It's found in some grains. It's in honey. And fructans, these are longer chain molecules that are found in wheat, rye, barley, onions, garlic.
And basically
the onion
everywhere.
The onion family. No, that's good news. There's plenty of foods you can still eat. But as you can probably gather from the foods I've just mentioned, you know, these are everyday staples. So they've been in our diets for a very long time. However, we are now very aware of fructose malabsorption.
What exactly is it?
In our small intestine, that's where we have the job of absorbing all of the building blocks that are in foods, and that includes fructose. Now, in our small intestine, we've got two pathways by which we can absorb fructose. The first one is where fructose is absorbed freely across the intestine, no problems at all in great quantities, and it's really not an issue, you know, great uptake. And this is what we call a glucose-independent pathway, and that's called that because fructose goes across on its own, no relationship to glucose at all, which is another sugar in food. And the other pathway that we have to absorb fructose is one where the only way that fructose can be absorbed across is with the presence of glucose. So glucose piggybacks, if you like, the fructose across the intestine. So there's these two pathways that exist in humans. In people who are fructose malabsorbers, they can no longer absorb that via that first method I mentioned. They can no longer absorb fructose freely across the intestine.
So they need the glucose.
Exactly. So
otherwise it just sits there.
No, otherwise it will pass through, continue its journey along the small intestine and arrive into the large intestine, where it actually acts as a food source for the bacteria that live in the large intestine. And in fact, that's where the symptoms of fructose malabsorption can come about, is the bacteria will munch on the fructose that wasn't absorbed in the small intestine, and it's fermented, and that releases gas, which can cause bloating and wind, etc. So people who have fructose malabsorption, the good news is they don't have to cut out fructose altogether. They can still have fructose, but only if foods have the same amount of glucose present.
What are the other symptoms?
Okay, so most commonly they are the classic symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome. Now, these include bloating, wind, and abdominal distension. So bloating is a feeling of fullness, and abdominal distension is actually when you see your stomach sticks out. It's the people who say that they wake up with a flat tummy in the morning and by the end of the day they're looking 5 months pregnant. Of course, changes in bowel habits, so it might be diarrhea or constipation or a fluctuation between the two. Abdominal pain can be a symptom. People can have reflux. And another symptom that's really, really common, but it's not anything to do with the digestive tract, is fatigue and poor concentration. It's phenomenal how many people are fatigued with this condition. And in terms of the uptake and interest from medical professionals, it has been enormous because, you know, people presenting with these symptoms, which can be called symptoms of irritable bowel, this group of people have been hard to treat in the past. You know, there hasn't been one easy solution for everybody. And this gives us nice scientific basis behind how and why it is that people can get symptoms. And the treatment's diet. You know, it's not like you're taking a medication and any other ongoing tests and investigations. Once people who've presented with those symptoms I was referring to have been, you know, an important thing is that they are checked out for celiac disease. And once that's done and we know we're dealing with fructose malabsorption and any of the other sugars that are part of the collection of sugars we call FODMAPs, once we know that's what we're dealing with, then, you know, it's a very nice, easy road for the patients to follow.
And what does FODMAP stand for?
So FODMAP is an acronym that refers to fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides and polyols. Foods that are high in FODMAPs, first of all, if we look at the foods that have got lots of excess fructose, that includes honey. And then with the fruits, it's apples, pears, mango, watermelon, and it's sometimes also used as a sweetener, so looking out for high fructose corn syrup as a problem. Then with the fructans, that's present in onion and the onion family. It's not just white onions, it's brown onions, Spanish onions. It's also in garlic, leeks, shallots. Spring onions are interesting. It's the white part only that's a problem with spring onions. You can still have the green part. It's in wheat, rye and barley, and sometimes used as an additive in particularly in things like yogurts. There's an ingredient called inulin, which is a problem. With lactose is present in milk, but interestingly, it's not every product made from milk that's an issue. It is an issue in milk, ice cream, custards, yogurts, and soft cheeses that are unripened, such as ricotta, cottage, cream cheese, mascarpone. However, it's not a problem in hard cheeses, so that's exciting news for people who are off lactose. They can still have hard cheeses. Now, with the galacto-oligosaccharides, or what we abbreviate to being GOS, that's present in the legumes, so baked beans, kidney beans, velotti beans, etc. It's also present in lentils and chickpeas. And the polyols, these are the sugar alcohols, found in some fruits, including, again, apples and pears. It's also in cherries, peaches, plums. It's in some vegetables, including mushrooms, cauliflower, snow peas. And then it can be used as an artificial sweetener. And these include sorbitol, mannitol, xylitol, maltitol, and also isomalt behaves in a similar way.
What causes fructose malabsorption?
Four most common reasons: a bad bout of gastroenteritis, a long or heavy duty course of antibiotics, a physical or emotional trauma, and I would suggest that having a baby is a physical trauma. And the final one is often travelling. You know, so travelling, we often hear of things like barley belly. The bottom line is, though, you know, clearly that's not all that's involved in the trigger for getting symptoms, because people can travel all the time and not have symptoms. People can have gastro, people can go on antibiotics and not have these issues. So people have the susceptibility to it, and then something tips them over.
And back to Lila's breath hydrogen test to diagnose fructose malabsorption. Sue explains how it works.
It's measuring the production of gas, and the gas would only be there if the sugars have not been absorbed in the small bowel. So it's a measure of malabsorption, really. So we have a cutoff of 10 parts per million. So if you blow into the machine or into the bags more than 10 parts per million, for two consecutive readings, that tells us that, okay, you didn't absorb whatever drink you just drank, whatever sugar was in there, you didn't absorb it, and so it's an indicator to show malabsorption.
And we're done. Good girl.
It's gone up quite a lot, hasn't it?
It's gone up quite a lot, and now it's plateaued and about to come down.
So she's had a reaction to the fructose, but it's now up to the doctor to decide what that reaction
is. That's exactly right, yes. It's for the doctor to interpret these, the results, not only their breath hydrogen levels, but also her symptoms.
Thanks a lot for your time.
You're welcome.
And the results of Lila's test were interesting. Luckily for us, a passing pathologist offered to interpret her test on the spot. And to my relief, her issues aren't because of fructose malabsorption. Crack open that box of apples. He said the test showed the cause was an overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine, which could be treated with the course of antibiotics and by keeping FODMAP foods at moderate levels, so I'm still on the lookout for those. And a huge thank you to the pathology staff at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne for their patience and for allowing me to record there.
And you can download that story from the RN First Bite website, where Maria's put up a host of links to more information. And we also have a blog on fructose-friendly foods that you can jump on as well.